And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back together on a Thursday as we head towards a little Thursday night football and a huge weekend, Buck, of college football action with a lot on the line, some big games, as well as looks like some weather games could be coming our way here in the NFL. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm great. But DJ, this is the fun part of the season. When you talk about the weather games, it reminds me of a kid playing video games where you could set the weather and you could play the video game and have your team play in the snow, because we never really see it often in the National Football League. But this weekend, we might get a chance to see some snowy games, and I'm excited about that.
All right, we're gonna get to some next-gen stat numbers that we pulled that are going to lead some fascinating discussions, as well as looking at some quarterbacks could be under pressure in the second half of the season. But I don't want to leave you on that thought. I want to go back to you on that real quick. Coldest, do you remember your coldest weather game you played in, and what did you do to combat the cold?
Okay, so the coldest game that I played in was the AFC Championship game, the Jacksonville Jaguars. We played up in New England against the Patriots. DJ, it was one of those games where the team said before the game, no sleeves, no sleeves. We're going to show them how tough we are. So nobody wears sleeves. We're bare arm or whatever. DJ, now as a returner, you don't want to have sleeves on because you need to have the skin, the ball contact to take care of it. However, the only thing that wearing no sleeves did, I was distracted the entire first half. The only thing I wanted to do was to get on the warm bench, to be by the blower, or to have the coat on. So when I would have to take the jacket off to go on the field for defense to play dime, the only thing I could think about is like, man, I don't really know what happens on this play, but I can't wait to get back to the sideline. So to me, that is the coldest game that I've been associated with. And I couldn't wait to get to halftime to say, yeah, you know what? I need to put this turtleneck on. I need to put some other layers on. I know we're supposed to be tough guys, but yeah, I'm gonna worry about the function over the fashion in this game.
I remember being at App State in the spring. We had a big snowstorm, but it was the wind that got you. It was freezing, and I had never played with gloves on as a quarterback growing up in San Diego, California. But we're out there, and I had never thrown with a glove. But I'm like, I don't even care how I play today. I mean, I'm putting these gloves on my throwing hand, and we'll just see what happens, man. It wasn't too bad. It was the old Newman gloves. You remember the Newman gloves? The young kids don't know about the Newman gloves.
Oh, yeah, the big end. Yes.
Newman gloves, they're real thick and sticky.
Oh, I love them. Those are my favorite gloves. Man, I wish they would bring them back. I love Newman gloves. So you get me
in. I don't know what happened to Newman. All right, let's jump.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Buck. Finish that one. Finish that thought.
Oh, no. I'm just saying, like, you're talking about the Newman gloves. So I remember the winter Newman gloves, which had the warm cotton around the outside of the glove. So when you stick your hand in, it was nice and warm and toasty, but you still had the tactified nature of the glove. Now, you couldn't really feel the ball, but your hands were warm. It was out there like going out and catching in mittens. But I felt good. I felt better because my hands were warm.
That's all that mattered. That's all that mattered at that point in time, no doubt. All right, let's get into some next-gen stats. I like doing this periodically, finding some numbers and diving into them, see what we can learn. So we're going to start here with some pass rushers. Then we're going to we'll get to some wideouts here in just a little bit. We'll do that after we take a break in a little while. But I want to look at three stats. The first one being pressure percentage. So a minimum of 50 rushes, but the pressure percentage, the percentage of your rushes where you're generating pressure. Then after that, pulled off the get-off time, which we always focus on. How quick can you get across the line of scrimmage, big-time burst and get-off. And then lastly, just the raw number of pressures. So I want to go through and pull out some of these names, see if anything surprises you on these as we go through them one by one here, Buck. But the top 10 in terms of edge rushers, and we're looking at pressure percentage, we've got Dante Fowler, Justin Houston. You've got Julian Okwara from the Lions. You've got Baron Browning from the Broncos. Cam Thomas for the Arizona Cardinals. Miles Garrett, no surprise. Chinna Nwosu with the Seahawks has been a big get for them. Za'Darius Smith having a phenomenal year. Trey Hendrickson. And then Charles Omenihu with the 49ers. Is there any name on that list that jumps out to you and means anything to you?
Well, I don't know if it's in any names, but the thing that stands out to me, DJ, the lack of first rounders that are on that list. I know you mentioned Miles Garrett or whatever, but I think it's one of those things where we go back and we get into the spring and we're talking about draftees. It appears that you can find a credible threat off the edge without expending a first round pick. Miles Garrett is up there, but some of the names you're talking about are guys that were drafted mid to late rounds. So to me, that's the first thing that stands out. I think the other thing would be some of those guys like Justin Houston. The fact that Justin Houston is still able to generate pressure at this stage of his career kind of confirms to me that pass rushing is not just about athleticism. It's about skill and technique. And when I think about Justin Houston, because he's been around the game so long, he is able to win people because he has all the tricks of the trade. He understands how to win with the classic textbook moves. He also has some impromptu stuff that he'll throw at people. But when you play the game a long time, you develop an expertise. And I do believe it is technique over talent in some cases when it comes to these pass rushers.
Yeah, it's a great point you made right there. I'll give you a name here, Baron Browning. This is a player, if you think about the Broncos' willingness to trade Bradley Chubb, it wasn't just the fact that you know they weren't going to be able to pay Bradley Chubb. I think they felt pretty confident what they had here in a young player in Baron Browning who's kind of emerged from somebody who was off the ball to somebody that's on the ball and really show you some big-time juice and burst as a pass rusher, and the QB pressure percentage is outstanding for him. We're going to get to, once we finish all three of these stats, we'll get to the guys who show up in all three categories. There's only two names that show up in the top 10 in all three categories, so we'll get you that in a minute. Let's get to the next one, though. This is Getoff. This is fascinating to me because the leader in Getoff is Bryce Huff, who plays a very limited number of snaps for the Jets, 10 to 12 snaps a game, and they basically, you're going to bring him in on pass rush downs, third downs, and his job is you are a fastball, and we're going to try and soften teams up, and all of a sudden they got to deal with you wide nine alignment and let him go. He's number one on that list. Myles Garrett, Joey Bosa, Josh Sweat, Justin Houston again shows up, Carl Lawson, Baron Browning again shows up, Patrick Johnson is with the Eagles, who's a later round pick, Robert Quinn, and Trey Hendrickson. So you see Justin Houston on there again, Buck. You see Myles Garrett on there again. You see Baron Browning on there again. You get some repeats.
You know, you do get some repeats. And it's funny because when we talk about that part of it is it's not only your athleticism, but it's snap count anticipation, being able to understand it, looking at the ball squeeze from the center, all of that stuff. I think it's interesting that you bring up Huff from the Jets, because I'm looking at the Jets and I'm looking at the way that they've been performing. And I dug deeper into the stats, and the Jets are one of the teams that are really using a four-man rush to generate all their pressure. They're actually worse when they blitz than when they bring a standard traditional four-man pressure with maybe some twists and games. And when you're able to generate that, I kind of call them the New York Sack Exchange part two, because it reminded me of those 80s Jets teams that are able to just dominate at the point of attack. And so everyone knows the notable names. When you talk about Quinnen Williams, you talked about Carl Lawson, but now you have a guy like Huff that comes in to play a very specific role. He is the relief pitcher. He has one pitch, a fastball, but he sends you down in flames because the fastball is unhittable. It's a very unique trait to have, but it's really creative in terms of the way the Jets are folding him into the rotation to be able to generate some pressure and get another guy in a role as a key contributor.
Yeah, and Carl Lawson, another Jet that shows up on here as well. I think a little bit of that is them just cutting these guys loose too and letting them play that attacking front. And you're right. That remember that blow up on the sideline with Quinnen Williams and his defensive coordinator, where he was upset saying, stop blitzing. We don't need to blitz. I think that was right before they won on that streak where they've won five or six games, and they've totally backed off on that and said, fine, we're going to rush four, let you guys get home and do your thing. I saw it in the 49ers, seeing them live against the Chargers last Sunday night. Fred Warner talked about in the first half, they were trying to dial things up and they were getting beat on some things. They got in the locker room at halftime and said, stop, just let our front rush and we'll play coverage behind it. And that's where they found a lot of success by doing that. I think it's sometimes you can get a little cute, Buck, and then sometimes it's just, you know what, we have 7-8 defensive linemen. We're going to keep them fresh. We're going to rush four, and we're just going to keep coming after you with those four guys.
You know, it's funny, DJ, that you talked about that. I saw a clip this week earlier from Robert Saleh talking about the defense and talking about how they play fast and how, look, it's very simple in terms of what they do. They want their guys to just be able to see it and go get it. And that is not only the secondary in terms of playing a simple coverage where they know exactly what they do. They see all the different variables that you can face against that coverage. But then up front, hey, we're not going to complicate it. You don't have to remember which gap to get into on this blitz and that blitz. Your job is to whip the guy in front of you, get in your track stance like a Panther, and go get it. And they have been successful. And it's one of those things. You talked about the Niners. Then we talk about the Jets. When you can rush four and cover with seven, it allows you to have maximum coverage to eliminate the deep balls and the big plays. but your guys up front have to be able to hunt. And some of these teams have guys that can hunt.
And the other thing I will say about these teams that are running this front, I continue to see more B-gap wins. In other words, if you're a tackle, everybody's going to teach a tackle, look, if you want to set inside out. If you're going to get beat outside, it allows your quarterback some room to climb up in the pocket and get away from you. You cannot get beat inside. And I think what happens sometimes is when you line up so wide, you get in those wide nines. These tackles are so worried about speed and how you're going to be able to cut that angle, and they're going to beat you right off the snap. You know they're rolling off the ball. A lot of times you're seeing those tackles overset, which has left them susceptible to inside counters, inside spins. But I'm seeing those teams with those wide fronts actually winning a lot on the inside of the tackle, which is a home run. That's the coup de grace there. If you're an edge rusher, to be able to win inside on a tackle, Buck, that's instant win.
Oh, I know somewhere the Washburn family is excited. I know you're very tight with them. I know they are proponents of the wide nine alignment. They want to come downhill. They want to tilt. They want to run around the corner like it's on a racetrack. But they've been very, very successful doing that. And it's one of those things that if you can line up in a wide nine, the immediate pressure that you put on the tackle, because you almost have to run out of your stance to get there on the speed rush. But then if the pass rusher has one or two other counters, either the inside move or a spin move when you go up too far and they whip up under, it is a problem. And because they can stress you in terms of the way they set the front on the inside, whoever your playmate is, the D-tackle playing on the guard, that tackle is on an island. And one-on-one against some of these athletes and technicians, we're seeing the pressure percentages and all that. I mean, it's a win. And because the way the game is where you have to get the ball out quickly against pressure, and you can't necessarily blitz people. You need to have guys that can win that so you can take away the short stuff and give your rush enough time to get to the quarterback.
Interesting thing, talk about that 49er front. You know who's number one against the run as well? The 49ers, only giving up 82.7 yards per game. So I think that's just penetration. You're winning not only as a pass rush, but you're able to win against the run. It's disruptive, especially in kind of an outside zone league that it has predominantly been. That penetration kills that. So it's interesting how it's worked on the way to the quarterback being able to stop the run as well. Last category, this is just raw quarterback pressures. Za'Darius Smith, Chenna Nwosu, we've seen him on there twice. Myles Garrett, you get Brian Burns showing up for the first time. Sam Hubbard, Danico Autry, Nick Bosa, Josh Allen, Montez Sweat. You've got some ties here at the end. That's Matt Judon, Hendrickson. Carl Lawson shows up for the second time. As well as you think about a big defensive tackle, Dexter Lawrence, Big Dex shows up in there. But only two guys made all three lists. So they are in the top 10 for defensive linemen when you think about get off, pressure percentage, and then just the raw number of pressures. Myles Garrett, I guess that shouldn't be a surprise. You know, I think a lot of people would consider him the best in the business. He shows up on all three lists. The second name, Trey Hendrickson. Is somebody I know you've talked a lot about over the last few years on our shows, Buck, but Trey Hendrickson is the other one that shows up on all three of those lists.
You know, I can't even really call him underrated because I think he has earned Pro Bowl distinction and honors. But you talk about someone who was, I would say, kind of lightly regarded when he was coming out of New Orleans because he had that big year, his final year there, and you wonder, will that translate? He's done nothing but really take it to the next level since he joined the Cincinnati Bengals. He is a legit pass rusher one. A guy who has not only the technical ability to win off the edge, but he is a relentless pursuer of the quarterback. And sometimes, you know, we talk about it, it's easy to put guys in that category like, hey, high motor guy, but his relentlessness, his passion to pursue the quarterback, the way that he fails to give up on downs and how he wins on second and third effort. This is an outstanding pass rusher, and he's one of the rare guys that has the tools to win right out the gate, but also has the competitive stamina to win if the down goes longer and longer and longer. He's an outstanding player for the Bengals.
Yeah, interesting. Again, I don't think we can call him underrated anymore. He's gotten some acclaim. He's gotten some attention that's well-deserved. Somebody that's just a complete pass rusher, a big-time player there for the Cincinnati Bengals. So I thought that was fun kind of digging some of those next-gen stats on pass rushers. We have some next-gen stats on receivers, including rookie receivers. We're going to get to a little bit later on in the show. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to talk about five quarterbacks that have the most at stake in the second half of the season. This relates to an article that Bucky has on NFL.com. So we'll jump into that right after this. Buck, you have a recent article on NFL.com. Everybody can find it. It's a fascinating topic where you're talking about quarterbacks with the most at stake in the second half of the season. So why don't you rip us through these five and give us a little thumbnail sketch of why you believe these guys are under the most pressure here.
Well, DJ, down the second half of the season, a lot of decisions are made on what you want to do with a quarterback. Do you want to keep them? Do you want to move on? Do you want to extend them? And are these guys franchise guys for the long term? And so some of the names on the list are guys that we know about, but then some of them may be surprises. And so we'll start off with number one. I have Aaron Rodgers on the list. And part of the reason why Aaron Rodgers is on the list is because he's an older quarterback, even though he's making $50 million per, 38 years old. How much longer is he going to play, particularly with the Packers struggling like they are on the outside? Does he want to continue to play? Does he like what he's doing? Does he believe this team still has a chance? How this team fares down the stretch could determine if number 12 continues to be a Packer. Second guy on the list, how about Mac Jones for the New England Patriots? I know he's a former number one first-round pick for the Patriots. He was a Pro Bowler last year. But earlier in the season, we were having serious conversations about whether Mac Jones should be the starting quarterback or Bailey Zappi. So I think where there's smoke, there's fire. There may be some internal discussions in the Patriots building about, is this guy the long-term answer? Let's see how he performs and see if he can retain his job, even though he was a highly coveted pick when they made him a season ago. Geno Smith for the Seahawks. Can he continue to ride the magic carpet ride? He's Cinderella with the clock strike midnight on his game. He's been terrific in terms of completion percentage, passer rating, but can he continue to play at this level? The Seahawks need to know, because how he fares could determine whether they jump into this quarterback market in the draft or whether they continue to ride and hinge their hopes on Geno Smith. Jimmy Garoppolo is another quarterback. Look, he was on the practice field, exiled, not even a part of the team. They lose Trey Lance. He comes back, and now the San Francisco 49ers are shaping up to be maybe one of the teams that is vying for a title in the NFC. He's sitting in the catbird seat. If this team goes on a run, are they willing to kind of pull the plug on a Trey Lance experiment and allow Jimmy Garoppolo to be their quarterback, or is he set up to go somewhere else? Live riding on how he performs. And then the final guy down the stretch is Jared Goff for the Detroit Lions. Former number one overall pick, led a team to a Super Bowl. He's in Detroit. He's been solid by all accounts. The offense was explosive early. He's kind of come back to earth of late. What do the Lions want to do? Do they see him as a long-term solution, or are they ready to jump into this quarterback market in the draft? A lot riding on how he performs down the stretch. But this team has won some games, so he may have a chance to keep his job.
I want to start where you ended there with Jared Goff. Jared Goff is only 28 years old. This is somebody who was first overall pick in the draft, somebody who's been in a Super Bowl. If you take his numbers where he is right now and project him out, he stays on this current trajectory he's on. He's going to throw for 4,300 yards, 28 touchdowns, 13 picks. I mean, I think that's winning football, Buck. I know they have roster holes. This defense needs to add pieces. They trade TJ Hockenson to be able to get some more draft capital to help them out. I mean, I think if they were blown away by a quarterback, I could see him doing it. But I think Jared Goff has played well enough and he's young enough that I think you could address some of these other needs if the draft kind of falls your way and you're staring at some big-time defensive talent. Where are you at on that?
Well, I'm kind of like that. I feel like Jared Goff has always been undervalued and underrated. Like, I know he has limitations, but I think when you put him in an offense that plays to his strength, he has shown that he can be an all-star caliber player. He also can get a team to a Super Bowl. I don't know if you can fully evaluate who he is and what he is with the Lions until you have better players around him. You have Amon-Ra St. Brown, but I don't know if you have enough skill talent to be able to say, like, hey, we're winning or losing because of Jared Goff. And so I think he should stay. I think the number is a manageable number where you can continue to build the roster up while maybe looking for the franchise quarterback of the future. But I don't know if that needs to be the major priority. I think if anything, because the Lions have been competitive, let's see if we can continue to add talent. And if the quarterback falls to us, he falls to us. But I don't think that is a must-have position right now for the Detroit Lions.
And, Jimmy Garoppolo, the fascinating part of that for me, it's not exactly the same. I'm not comparing these as players. But do you remember when the Chargers, they weren't happy with Drew Brees? They go out and draft Phillip Rivers. And then Phillip Rivers was kept on the bench because Drew Brees was able to hold him off until he ended up falling, hurting his shoulder, and then they end up letting him go and off into free agency. He goes to the Saints. The rest is history. But I wonder now with Jimmy, if they have success and they go on a run and maybe they get to another Super Bowl, Buck, If he holds off Trey Lance when Trey Lance comes back healthy, we don't know what Trey Lance. It's the great unknown. But for whatever Jimmy's weaknesses are and his limitations are, somehow this team finds ways to win football games with him year in, year out.
Yeah, DJ, like now I'm beginning to lean more towards Jimmy Garoppolo being a long-term answer for the Niners. Like, we always want more, but when you look at the record and you look at how they perform when he is at the helm, this is a team that consistently wins when Jimmy Garoppolo is their quarterback. And even though it's been unfortunate that injuries have happened and derailed maybe Trey Lance's progress, I think at the end of the day, as a decision maker, you got to do what's best for the team. And what appears to be best for the team is having number 10 as their starting quarterback. Look, you hate to do this. You would hate to move on from Trey Lance, or you hate to kind of keep him stuck behind Jimmy Garoppolo. But if he plays well down the stretch, I don't think you can hand Trey Lance the starting job and not run the risk of losing the locker room, particularly with all the success that they're enjoying with him at quarterback.
Yeah, it's really an interesting conversation, and some of those other names on there as well with Rodgers, Mac Jones, Geno Smith. Again, you can log on NFL.com and you can find this article and read more about these guys that have a lot at stake here in the second half of the season. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to look at a number that I think is compelling when you're evaluating wide receivers. Again, another next-gen stat. We're going to jump into it. We'll do that right after the break.
NFL Plus is the league's new exclusive video streaming subscription service. NFL Plus has your game day covered with live local and primetime regular season and postseason games right on your phone or tablet. NFL Plus is available in the NFL app and at NFL.com. Subscription plans start at just $4.99 a month. Fans can visit plus.nfl.com and sign up for a free trial of NFL Plus today. DJ, now one position that you know you're always going to pique my ears and get my interest is when you talk about pass catchers, playmakers, wideouts. It has become one of the most marquee positions in football. You did a little research, a little stuff within Next Gen Stats. Tell me what you discovered.
Well, I was looking for a stat that I was curious about, and that is actually it's referred to as yards after catch over expected. So it's yak OE, and that's an interesting number because the way that it's tabulated is it's not just the yards you get after the catch. It's what's expected of you. So this is expected you're going to get 4 yards based off where everybody's positioned on the field. Again, they have all the GPS, they have all the information, they have all the data, and they can say, okay, this is what was expected. You're supposed to get 4, you got 7, so we're going to add 3 yards over expected. And when you look at the yards over expected after the catch, I thought we'd break it down with the veteran players, with everybody, the entire pool, as well as the rookie pool. And when we look at the at everybody, here's the numbers here. Here are the leading guys, the wideouts, that are doing more than expected after the catch. Not a surprise, number one on the list, Deebo Samuel, in terms of wideouts. Then you get to Juju Smith-Schuster, Jalen Waddle, Cooper Kupp, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Rondale Moore, Laviska Shenault, A.J. Brown, Stephon Diggs. To me, you can find a meaningful stat book when you find what you know with your eyeballs tells you are some of the best wide receivers in the NFL when they show up on a list like this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, you can tell guys who have those special qualities with the ball in their hands. In the past, we've talked about being taught early in my scouting career about punt returners and guys who have that return ability and how maybe it may translate into success as wide receivers in terms of the yak that they can produce. But I think some of it kind of speaks to a guy's not only their elusiveness and explosiveness, but how about their toughness? Because at a time where a lot of receivers like get what they can and then they get down, there are other guys who really push the envelope in terms of trying to get every yard that they can get on the field. And for those guys, those are the ones that are scary. When you have a Deebo Samuel that can break tackles in the open field and he really tests the toughness and the tackling skills of the DBs on the perimeter, those are the guys that make it very, very difficult and challenging to defend because you can draw up the right coverage, but what you can't do is make sure that your guys have enough courage to be able to get those guys down with big hits.
Yeah, I think it's something for scouting as well. You know, you think about the emphasis you could place on that. When you look at some of these players, some of the top players in the league that show up on this list, when we're evaluating guys for the draft, we talk about, okay, he's a great route runner. We talk about his ability to catch the football, his ability to track the football, his ability to high point the football. What he does after the catch is pretty darn important, especially when you can take everybody and say, here's the expectation, and these guys go above and beyond that with what they're able to accomplish. I think those dynamic guys after the catch, I think there's something to be said there. Also fascinating to me, the number one guy on the list, any position, is not a wide receiver. It's actually Christian McCaffrey. So you have two 49ers at number one and number two with Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel. So they're known for what they do after the catch, and they go bring in Christian McCaffrey, who's done it better than anybody this year in terms of yards after catch over expected. All right, let's look at the rookies. These are the rookies and who leads in those categories, in this category. It's Drake London, number one, followed by Khalil Shakir with the Buffalo Bills, Garrett Wilson with the Jets, Romeo Doubs with the Packers, followed by his teammate Christian Watson. So two Packers rookies show up on this list. And then you end up with Treylon Burks and Wandale Robinson, the last couple. But I want to focus here on two of these first three. You look at Drake London, number one, is a first-round pick, and then Garrett Wilson, who's number three, is a first-round pick. I think that was in the scouting report for both those guys for different reasons. Drake London with the strength to be able to run through tackles, and then the elusiveness of what you have with Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, no, Drake London, let's talk about him first. One, he's a supersized wide receiver on the perimeter. Tremendous physical dimensions that kind of dwarf some of the small corners that he has to face. And so what happens is when he gets his hands on the ball, it's hard for those guys to bring them down. DJ, we've talked about the small DBs and why we're not fans of small DBs, because they get exposed when it comes to being able to tackle. Well, now Drake London, a wide receiver, challenges that because of his size and superior dimensions. And so you want to get him the ball in space because he is a playmaker. Garrett Wilson is completely different. I think with Garrett Wilson, when you're looking at the Jets passing game, their number one receiver, he is a guy who can win with quickness. He has some wiggle and some shake and bake, so he's hard to bring down in one-on-one situations in the open field. And he has done a great job of maybe even showing more than he displayed at Ohio State in terms of his ability to turn short gains into big gains because he can make the first defender miss. That's the quality that everyone wants because he can allow you to play a rhythmic passing game and still know that you may generate some big plays on horizontal plays as opposed to just vertical.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the highlights of Garrett Wilson. If you want to just watch all his targets this year, you can see the explosiveness. And so a lot of that run after catch is him just putting his foot in the ground and going. But then you add the elusive ability that he has as well, make people miss. I think he's got a chance. I know Zach Wilson's got to step his game up. But if I told you right now, Buck, when we think about guys like A.J. Brown, Stephon Diggs, Justin Jefferson, like these premier dudes, the Cooper Kupps of the world, if he gets good quarterback play, you know, as he moves forward in his career, I think Garrett Wilson can find his way into that conversation. Where are you at on that one?
Oh, I'm there. DJ, I'm there. Like, just looking at the B-roll clips that we just showed while you were discussing him, you can see a couple things that stand out. One, he is an outstanding route runner. And when I mean an outstanding route runner, you can see not only the patience and discipline when it comes to getting to his depth and getting out of his breaks, but he has the little stuff that you need. Head and shoulder fakes. He has the ability to give you different stems and releases to create advantages when it comes to the leverage. And then he's tough, man. He's courageous. Catching the ball inside the numbers is not for everybody. But because he's willing to do it, there's a lot of hidden yardage over the middle of the field. And so the number one receivers that we laud and applaud, the Justin Jeffersons of the world, the Cooper Kupps of the world, now Garrett Wilson will be in those categories. He can do more because he can constantly create separation. And then when he gets his hands on the ball, he makes it happen. And I want to make sure I put Stephon Diggs in there because I don't want him to get mad at me for not including him because he's also one of those dynamic playmakers that we talked about.
Yeah, that was my comp for him coming into the draft with Stephon Diggs. I thought that's who he kind of reminded me of with the way that he plays. One more thought on this. I want to get your take. We've talked a lot about defensive tackles and how when you're playing a lot of too high coverage, teams are playing with light boxes. You're worried about explosive plays, trying to take that away. That maybe that could change the way you scout defensive tackles because you need some bigger guys to eat up space because you're playing with fewer guys down there. I also think now that you have this too high coverage and you're trying to play off, keep the ball in front of you, doesn't that stand to reason at the wide receiver position that run after catch has never been more important than it's going to be going forward?
Well, not only that, run after catch and route running. I think now you really have to be able to evaluate the skills when it comes to the route runners. Because before, and a lot of times in scouting, it's easy to get fascinated with the explosive and dynamic athlete that when we're watching college tape, he's just blowing past people because he has better athleticism. He's a faster guy. but in the league, because everyone is playing these umbrella coverages, they're not letting you throw it over the top of them. They're daring you to catch it up under and see if you can nickel and dime it down the field. Yes, I want route runners who can get open and find those voids, but I also want guys who can make the first defender miss, because in zones where all eyes are there, if you miss a tackle in those things, that's when it has an opportunity to get out the gate. You need to have guys who have the full toolbox. We've talked about it the last couple of years when it came to the draft. The guys who have an immediate impact in the league are more the route runners than the explosive playmakers and athletes. Right now, I'm looking for skilled technicians that are able to get open against any coverage and also have a little plus ability when it comes to being able to run after the catch.
Yeah, I think it's smart. I think it's a smart discussion. I think it's interesting when you're evaluating these players and trying to sort them and rank them, how some skills, as the game changes, they move up in importance. And I think you nailed it right there with the way you described that, Buck. Anything you want to add, Buck, before we get out of here and wrap this one up?
I'm going to say this, DJ. This was like one of the best discussions we've had in a couple of weeks. Like, it was really great to kind of dig into not only the numbers, but then the film and kind of marry it together. I think as scouting continues to advance and move on, the guys who are going to be the best scouts and the best evaluators are able to take the numbers off the paper and bring the evidence from the film to make great decisions on who's who and what's what when it comes to talking about prospects or even players in the pros. I think you have to marry and meld the analytics with the evaluation part from the film study.
Yeah, and I think it's important to kind of see where the game is going and be able to adapt and change along the way in terms of what you prioritize, not only in positions, but within those positions, what skills you should prioritize. So again, it's a discussion that will continue on here on Move the Sticks as we continue to get towards the draft. I want to tell you guys, appreciate you listening to us. I appreciate you leaving us some of those reviews on Apple Podcasts. A bunch of you have done that. That's huge. We appreciate that as well. Remember, you can find all of our content on the NFL's YouTube channel, NFL.com. The NFL app as well. So be on the lookout for everything we've got coming your way. That's going to do it. I appreciate you guys. We'll see you next time right here on Move the Sticks.